In NBA Jam's terms, Josh Naylor is on fire. Is he ready to bring the smoke to his favorite city, the Windy City, to burn an already singed White Sox team in the first series between the Guardians and the White Sox? Find out today on Locked On Guardians.
You are Locked On Guardians, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Guardians, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. Today's episode is brought to you by Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use Locked On MLB for $20 off your first purchase. Last minute tickets, lowest prices guaranteed. I tend to speak in spoonerism, so I almost called it the Dame Time app, which would either be about ladies or Damon Lillard, your choice. You can go either way with that. There's Justin. I'm Jeff. I want to thank you for making Locked On Guardians your first listen today and every day wherever you get podcasts. Off day, so we have our, I know you're going to say on Friday, you just did the draft talk and the minors. We had some stuff we didn't get to, and it's the off day this week, and how we handle the off days. We do that. We also have a Chicago White Sox preview we don't have to go super in depth on that because I'll also be sharing out tomorrow a link to a White Sox crossover podcast I did with Crystal, who I can't remember which White Sox blog she's at. I'm terrible. But it was a fun chat. So you can get even more of it there. So make sure you pay attention. And then we got a fun new sponsor tomorrow. We'll be talking some pants. I'll give you that preview ahead of time. But how you feeling this fine evening with no baseball?
I'm a little bored. I got to be honest. I did some shopping for my honeymoon, some vacation clothes. So that was good. I'm ready for the rest of June. I'm ready for... I'll be really missing baseball for about a week there, but I'm good otherwise, and looking forward to a very heated matchup in Chicago this week. We got some former friends, got some guys that are not liked by certain people. It's going to be a fun week. Josh Naylor, we were looking for this other status from Elias Sports Bureau, but he was the first player in the post-expansion era to hit a home run to give his team the lead after the eighth inning in three straight games. So the first player ever to do that in the post-expansion era. So hopefully he keeps it going. I mean, if you look at his Savant page, again, we've talked about this before, all of his X stats are good. Like, his expected slugging is .530. Everything says that Josh Naylor should be absolutely terrorizing the baseball, and he should be going into Chicago to beat up on Lance Lynn this week, who's been terrible. We'll talk about him. Mike Clevenger, who's been terrible. And then there's Dylan Cease, which, we'll see how that goes. He's pretty good.
He's not as good as a year ago, though. He's not firing, but I mean, he's still very good. So,
but he has a good curveball, and that's an issue for Naylor. Lance Lynn, though, the guy who throws three fastballs, that should be fun for Josh Naylor. We'll get into all that. The White Sox issues the White Sox don't hit right-handers well. That's good for the Guardians. They do it lefties well. We'll see how that pairs against Logan Allen. We asked people yesterday on Monday about their, on Sunday, I should say, about their Monday, the confidence meter. And it was like 77% were in the 5-7 range. So everybody's, still, that's about, I'd say, where people should be in terms of what the division looks like. Everybody's kind of lukewarm. Like, yeah, there's no reason to panic and jump off the cliff. And I'm also not going to, sit there and say that the team is fixed, because Josh Naylor hit three home runs and they won two games against for as much star power as the Angels have, they're still a bad team. Now they're two games over .500. They are still not a good team. They have Mike Trout, Shohei Ohtani. They have a couple of good players in their lineup.
So keep buying free agents that are at the wrong, like they settled for Rendon after they lost on Garrett Cole. Yeah. And you don't settle in free agency. Like, that is the wrong maneuver to get. And then they've, the drafting has not gone well for them. They've not helped that core. They've lost draft picks with the free agents. And then when they do get someone like Joe Adell, I understand why you don't sell on Joe Adell. But, like, at the same time, like, that was maybe the one prospect you should have sold on. Like, they've not been able to bring help. They've done... if you could have flipped Adell at his peak for pitching, they probably should have done that, because they had so many outfielders in the system. Like, that's the time you probably need to think ahead and do that. And it's been really, really, really poor at development there. Like, there's no other way around it. Like, that core, even when they've had these, I mean, Sam Bachman, we can go back to everyone loved the draft or they took only pitchers. And I didn't hate Sam Bachman there. I thought it was a little bit of a reach. But like, he's not even a top 10 prospect for them. It's 2 years later. Like, how, in a bad system. Like, that's their development is, you want to know why it's a bad team? It's development. I mean, they can't develop to save their soul.
What's their success story? It's Reed Detmers.
Taylor Ward.
Taylor Ward, yeah. But Reed Detmers and Zach Nato.
And Sandoval.
Yeah, Sandoval. Well, they had the trade for him, yeah. But
still. but he was like in low A when they got him. So he was their guy.
Enough about the Angels, though. So, I mean, yeah, we talked about it yesterday. The Guardians had a 5-4 homestand. They struggled against Detroit, but they won a game, and they didn't really score a lot against the Twins. The Twins are a bad offensive team, but so they didn't have to win that. I don't know if you can really sit there and say the team's fixed because they won their second series out of three when they had struggled to win the series for a while. A couple homers, you know, is nice. They, you know, it was something they had like 10% of their home runs this weekend all year. So nothing, you don't want to get too far in the right. And the whole poll was about, you know, do you feel like they're back on track or do you feel like they're at least looking in the right direction? I would say they are trending in the right direction, but, you know, like you said yesterday, Jose has picked up, even if he's not, you know, as good as he has been. Naylor's going in the right direction, and, you know, Jimenez and Rosario seem to be moving in the right direction. So, but we're going to focus again today on the minors because of an off day. Usually we do Around the Farm Fridays. This week it'll be Around the Farm Tuesday because of Monday's off day. And we'll continue to move this around with off days because just for a while, Thursday was the only consistent off day, and it'll go to Mondays in June. And actually next week it's back to Thursday. But Parker Messick, he won the Carolina League Player of the Week, Pitcher of the Week, I should say, for his 7 shutout innings last week with 7 strikeouts, 1 hit. No walks, not really a surprise for him. A 22-year-old pitching in the ACC, or who was from the ACC, really has no business pitching at that level. And I saw Anthony Castrovince tweeted that the Hillcats have like over 100 stolen bases as a team already. That league is just, it's a mess. And
yeah, there's no reason for him to be there other than they need to promote other guys. Like, you know, it's like there's no spot in high A. But yeah,
I can't say anything more about Nate Ferman at this point because I've already said, like, he's got more stolen bases than strikeouts. And you cannot scouting the stat line is not a great thing to do in general. It's definitely not good to do it low A at this point. I haven't seen anybody with a radar in Messick. I know the first time I heard his start this year, he was like 88 to 92, which is, you know, consistent with what he was before
college. Yeah, you're kind of hoping that. I mean, you kind of hope that he'd start to. Listen, he was a guy. Let's just be honest. When he was drafted, the knock on him was he wasn't in shape, and that was affecting.
I will say he looks a little better already.
So he looks better already, and you're hoping that maybe over the course of this year, continued work, that the velocity will come. But I mean, the reason you got one of the most dominant pitchers in college baseball, a lefty dominant pitcher, because he was viewed as low velocity and out of shape. Like, that was the thing. Parker Messick was universally
command, good changeup.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, not necessarily an undeveloped arm, which they do like. Yeah. And we'll talk about that too. Cade Smith has 10 saves now. Not that saves are really a big stat to track in AA or any level of the minors because they're just a product of the results. But I watched him a couple times this year, and he's sitting 93, 95. The slider's decent. The control's slightly better this year. And I think the WBC helped him a lot, actually. He pitched for Team Canada, the World Baseball Classic. I know Jeff's favorite thing to rehash here on May 15th or May 16th is he wants to.
I don't know what this thing is you're talking about. I have no idea.
It was this thing they did back in
March. No memory of it.
It was really fun.
Must have been really dull, and I put it out of my head.
Yeah, you missed a good time.
Oh, it's that thing where guys kept getting hurt. That's right.
Well, Cade Smith's not hurt, and he's pitching well because of it. You know, when you're pitching against Team Columbia or Team USA in a playoff atmosphere versus pitching in Canal Park against the Erie Seawolves, you're pretty prepared to pitch the late innings. So Cade Smith looked really good this year. Think he could be a relief option as soon as next year. I don't know if they'll have space for him this year. I mean, he does have to be added to the 40-man roster or be risked to Rule 5. So, you know, the Guardians have handled that the last couple of years. So we'll see what they can do there. Austin Peterson, another guy from last year's draft, he had another good couple of starts this week. You know, not really super impressive stuff, but I mean, the slider's decent. The fastball's like another 90-92, and the control is good. Again, they took guys that were top five in the NCAA strikeouts a year ago, and they're coming into low A, and they've already faced better players than they faced in low A in college. So this isn't really, I shouldn't say it's not hard for them, because it's still hard. It's still the pros, but this is not, you know, super difficult for them compared to what they were doing. I mentioned Magnus Ellerts in passing the other week, guy who continues to impress, another guy from last year's draft class. And I'm going to contradict myself before I wrap up this statement, because we have to get to the sponsor and we have to get to Jeff's stuff too. But I mean, Ellerts is striking out 36% of batters. He's 22 years old. Another guy who needs another challenge, but you know, he's not necessarily a guy who faced really good competition in college compared to Parker Messick and Austin Peterson. So somebody to keep an eye on as a reliever.
What do you mean? He faced top shelf stuff in school.
Yeah.
Absolutely the best.
I'm sure he did.
What was it? Was the Patrick? I can't remember which one was the last stop. If it was Florida Southwestern State College, which I've never heard of before. Yes. Hartford Community College, which I had never heard before, or Patrick and Henry Community College, which I had never heard of before.
I think Florida Southwest was his last stop, but
they were all, every single school was a different school that I had never heard of for Magnus Ellerts.
Yeah. And hey, you know, you could find arms anywhere. That's the whole point of this whole thing.
Yes.
Really quickly, I saw some people on Twitter talking about John Kenson Noel and how things have turned around for him. Last month of May, 12 games, month of May. 225, 354, 450. Is that improvement for him? Yeah, I guess so, considering he had a 713 OPS in the month of April. I guess that's an improvement for him. He's crushing lefties. He's got an OPS over 1,000 against lefties, but it's 537 or 573 against righties. So, gosh, are we looking at a platoon bat? I'm not going to sit here and say that today on May 16th at age 21. He turns 22 in July. He's still young for the level because he hasn't faced a pitcher younger than him yet at AAA. But I wouldn't necessarily say I feel any more confident today about John Kenson Noel than I did coming into the season. And people have asked too about Mike Collado in high A and low A. And again, I'm going to say 20-year-old and stat lines and at that level, just very, very hard to justify. I mean, a 24 walks, 16 strikeouts. That's great. Let's see what he does in double A. That's kind of where you start to look at things. I got one question. It's kind of a, not really a question, but it's a debate I want to have with Jeff here before we get into some college stuff, just on the other side of things. All right. I just bought some comedy tickets today for my fiance's birthday. I didn't have to stress out about these tickets, but there is always a time that you will be stressed out about buying tickets, whether that's playoff tickets, tickets to a concert that's selling out, or Guardians tickets at some point, provided they ever turn this this offense around. Maybe when they come home against the White Sox or the Cardinals, two very fantastic teams, you're definitely going to want to see them play. Buying tickets to those events shouldn't be stressful. Game Time is the fast and the easiest way to buy tickets for all sports, music, comedy, and theater near you. They have killer deals on last-minute tickets, and with the best price guarantee, you can stop stressing over getting tickets and start getting excited about your event. Game Time is the place for last-minute tickets, so forget planning months in advance. Get flash deals on all sports and events you want to go to, and with the Game Time guarantee, you will always get the best price. If you find tickets in the same section and row for less, Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. You can get images of your seats beforehand before you buy, so you know exactly what you're getting. Snag tickets without the stress with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, use the code LOCKEDONMLB. You will get $20 off your first purchase on top of all that good stuff. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code LOCKEDONMLB for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest prices guaranteed. And then, of course, 8:10, first pitch on Tuesday night. Tom Hamilton has the call from Guaranteed Field on Sirius XM for your Guardians and White Sox. Okay, Jeff, real quickly, I want to get into this debate and we'll make it quick. Pitching pipeline. I don't want to drag everybody down on an off day before nothing bad has happened, but let's say, okay, Joey Cantillo is on the 40. We know Gavin Williams has a promising future ahead of him. Daniel Spino, you know, hard to say what's going to happen there. He's going to be on the 40 at the end of the season no matter what, but, you know, everything's kind of up in the air. Justin Campbell is out with an elbow injury. No timetable for his return. Things are murky there. Your best pitching prospects after that are, after the guys I mentioned, are Doug Nikhazy, Jack Leftwich, Will Dion, and then, you know, there's Jacob Zibben, who we haven't seen yet, and Parker Mezick.
I mean, I'm not as concerned. I mean, Jackson Humphreys, I think if you're going to talk Zibben,
yeah,
in that group.
But we're talking
Dylan DeLuca, again, is one of those guys who there are a lot of people really like some of the advanced data on him they took. I think my one comment on heck, Ethan Hankins is interesting enough. We talked about him on yesterday's show.
But it's like, more interesting than it is, hey, yes, we've got more guys coming.
But at this time a year ago, you know who we weren't talking about? Tanner Bibee. You know, we were still focused on Dead Home. Like, I would, before I worry about the concerns of the pitching pipeline, to me at least, like, we got to get half a year in. We got to see who starts to emerge, who's popping, if Leftwich can make that next step. You know, maybe Tommy Mace recovers this year, you know, and turns into something. Maybe. Yeah. I mean, we got to kind of see. And really, I mean, those college guys from last year, we haven't seen any of them at a level that's really all that interesting. So, you know, can Messick add velocity? I believe he can. You know, can, you know, we won't see Jake Miller probably till maybe late in the year, all. Yeah. But, you know, he's someone to look at. You know, I still like Deno. I know it's been inconsistent with him, and I didn't bother to look at his numbers this year to see what he's doing in the early going. And I'm pretty sure they're not spectacular, or we would have talked about him.
Right.
But, you know, I think my general view, and maybe I'm being too Pollyanna with it, is like, give it time. I mean, heck, one can make a case the biggest breakout pitcher in the early going has been your and mine's favorite, Tanner Burns. So,
I mean, he has been better this year, I will say, than we gave him credit for. Yeah, no, I mean, he really has. I mean, I've been talking about Reed Johnston. He hasn't been terrific his last couple starts. Ryan Webb's been hit or miss a little bit so far, which is unexpected. You're right, but Hankins, we're still waiting to see what it looks like when he is, you know, back on the mound throwing every couple of days, every couple of turns in the rotation. I don't know. I just look at the low minors so far, and it's like, you know, beyond, you know, for a while there, all we could talk about was low A and high A, and all, you know, the Freemans and the Williamses, and, you know, a lot of guys the last couple of years have been coming up the system. And at the bottom of the level, you're talking like, you know, you're still waiting on Jason Chorio. You're still waiting on, hopefully, Chase DeLauder, who knows, and Welbin
Franziska. They've been slow. Like, they've been slow with the promotions this year, and I think that's part of it. We have not seen that aggressiveness. We saw that. It's more like they're settling into the old approach.
Yeah, I kind of feel like I said, you're right. It's okay to wait. Like, there are some names down there. It's just like, we have to see them. Like I said, Campbell, DeLucia, Zibben, Humphreys, those names all could be part of the pipeline. Those guys are all a lot younger, and they haven't had a lot of success developing high school arms like Zibben and Humphreys. Now, Campbell, DeLucia have a much better track record, but they haven't had a whole lot of success with those other kind of arms we talked about. It's just, I don't know. You look down at the pipeline and you're like, okay, it's not as strong right now. It could be, but right as of right now, you know, there's a little bit of, I don't know, hesitation, I should say. But you're right. Time will tell.
I do want to take a second and say Patrick Henry Community College, there are two players from that system in Cleveland's minor leagues right now. Bradley Hanner in AA, also from that same program.
Okay.
And Florida Southwestern State College, if you're curious, Joel Pinheiro. Pinheiro came from there.
Joel Pinheiro won me some fancy baseball leagues back in the day. Good for him.
And then I just want to kind of do this, even though I'm pushing back the draft a little bit before I drive into this. We had so many questions about Bo Naylor. And there's issues with blocking. There's some issues with receiving. There's issues with throwing. There's issues with setting too early. There's a lot, like, it's been a month and a half. They signed a catcher and didn't have him start for a reason. Like, I think we saw a year ago, if a guy is ready to go, like with Kwan, they will bite that bullet. They didn't feel he's ready to go a month and a half ago. You know what? A month and a half doesn't really change any of that stuff. So you might want him here, and the bat is ready, but defensively, there's a whole host of issues where they did not think he was ready, and I still don't think they're going
to
rush that.
And to be fair, also, left field comes with a lot less responsibility than catcher.
Yes.
Like, yeah. if even and Kwan obviously won a gold glove in left field last year, but even if Kwan's defense was like average at best, nobody cares about that because he was their leadoff hitter and he sparked the team offensively. Bo Naylor, if the defense suffers back there, even if he hits, it's going to have a major impact.
I know everyone's like, it can't get worse. It can defensively. And I'm not saying it would, but I'm saying they don't feel like he's ready.
But would he benefit from working with Zunino and Sandy Alomar versus whatever he's doing in AAA? That's the question. I don't know.
No, that's the hard part.
Yeah, it's trickier in
a
catcher. Okay, but you wanted to talk real quick about
draft. Yeah, so you know, I here's the thing. Let's see. Last year's draft class loaded with pitchers. Year before, terrible with college pitchers. This year's class really weak at college pitchers. And that's the general view. But I think we don't evaluate college pitchers correctly. And, you know, it leads to, you know, why does Tanner Bibee think he's going to the Cubs twice in the fourth round and ends up going to Cleveland in the fifth? Why does Bryce Miller go to Seattle in the fourth? And it's the pitch data that you, me, and most everyone else doesn't get to see that shows us the truth of a lot of these guys. You know, you want to see, and also Bibee, there's development. They saw things they liked and thought they could develop better. Why did they take three pitchers from Florida? Well, that Jack Leftwich tweet just calling out his old program for being sticks in the mud. And that's the same story we've heard at Virginia. Like if Andrew Abbott turns into a great pitcher, I remember being told when Daniel Lynch was drafted, like he basically told him to shove it and was going to do it his own way for like his last two starts as a junior. And some people applauded him for that. When you are looking for a pitcher, like I love Jaron Watts Brown. I think he is the fourth best college guy in this class. I think he is a top 25 guy, maybe even top 20, because I do look at certain stats. I do look at certain indicators that are positive. But I think sometimes when we are looking at guys, it's more about traits and tools. And sometimes it's a benefit. Like Jaron Watts Brown is from Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State got three great transfers a year ago. I would argue 1 through 5, they probably had the best talent-wise pitching staff in college baseball. And all those transfers came in and didn't develop worth a hill of beans and all went drafted later than everyone thought they would be. Even their own guys. Mitchell Stone's been there forever. His peak value was high school before he got there. He's like a 6'10 lefty. He's a ridiculously big kid. And, you know, Justin Campbell didn't add any velocity there. And that's a point in Jaron Watts Brown's favor is like he's not at a program where you see great growth and development. You might want to avoid the Oregon State arm, though. That is where Drew Rasmussen came from, but he had health issues that were kind of the bigger issue. I think you're looking for traits. You're looking for some basic ability stuff. But I think in a lot of respects that unless a guy is utterly dominant, I don't necessarily think it's a bad year for pitching. I think if you have the right data, it's the same year for pitching most years. I think last year was exceptional, but I threw this tweet out there. In response to something Willie said, and Willie's fantastic. Willie does better draft coverage than I do anymore, if I'm being honest. So, you know, I have nothing but respect for Willie. I don't want to be seen as anything else, but I threw that out there. And I think it's the first time ever Jeff Ponce, who's one of the top 10 people in this field of draft, has responded to a tweet of mine and liked that one. So I think when it comes to college pitching, one of those things we really have to realize is we are now in a traits game, not in a performance game. If they have both, fantastic. But if you're seeing some traits and you know a school just is dog poop when it comes to their development of arms, that listen, Jack Leftwich was a potential second round pick out of high school, didn't develop one iota in college. Same velocities when he got there, same velocities when he left. Tommy Mace went outside that program to try to add more. And I think he went later, even as a second round pick, wasn't he? I believe he's either a first rounder or a second rounder out of high school. With the Reds, chose not to sign, went to Florida, didn't develop. It's a common sign. It's a common story. And especially if you are a high school pitcher right now, if you're getting an offer that's, you know, six figures plus, take it. I'll just go ahead and throw that out there. We should probably bounce to break. We'll save some of these. Maybe I'll do one player profile after the break, just one. I think we got a pitcher you and I both want to talk about. And we'll save the other names for later. But first, a quick word from some sponsors.
Don't forget again on Tuesday night at 8:10, you can tune in to listen to Tom Hamilton and Rosenhaus with the call on Sirius XM, White Sox, and Guardians. We'll talk about the first pitching matchup and one quick piece of information on both teams' offenses coming up this week. But all right, Jeff, who do you want to highlight here?
Gotta be this guy, right? Do you agree with me?
Yeah.
So Kiefer Lord is fascinating because I'm going to tell you how big he was when he got to college, and this is mind-boggling to me. As a freshman at Carleton College, Division III school in Minnesota, he was 5'2", 95 pounds. I was 100 pounds in the fourth grade, and I was bigger than him in the fourth grade than he was as a freshman in college.
Same.
I stopped growing at 12. I'll be the first to admit I was a giant. Just stopped growing there. But 5'2", 95. He is now, I believe, 6'2", 165, I think. But he was throwing 81, which is kind of impressive to throw 81 at that size. Now he's 99. He's got a curveball with massive break, massive spin. As you know, having that curve, almost sweeper type of curve that has huge movement. I know sweepers big kind hurt. Of, you know, it's like that is how you get out lefties. You know, you need that weapon. And this is his first year at Washington. He has been fantastic. I know I just spent all this time saying stats don't matter, but again, they help. Like, it's not like you can draft a guy with bad stats if you see more things to it. And by the way, for me saying he's fantastic, there are people who look at him and be like, how can he be fantastic? He has an ERA over 4. Mm-hmm. But you look at, and his strikeouts per nine are only 9.67, but his walk per nine is 2.01. The home run rate is 1. So that's, you know, I don't want to say it's high, but it's one of those things that is causing his ERA to be higher. And we know that means that guys are hitting the ball in the air, plus Cleveland trait. Mm-hmm. He's not walking guys, plus Cleveland trait. He's undersized, late developmental. You know who else had a late development, big growth spurt?
Someone we really like.
Yep, one Mr. Bybee. and then on top of that, he's not going to turn 21 until late June, so he's young for his class. So you look through all of that, and you're like, okay, last 2 years at Carleton College, no knock on that program, but again, not a lot. There's literally no one when I looked at Carleton College that has been in the pros. The Baseball Reference page had 3 names, so there were 3 guys, but none of them since like my father's lifetime, or maybe one of them was in my father's lifetime. We're talking a long time ago. So Kiefer Lord, last year, by the way, if you're curious, at Carleton College, 14.88 strikes per nine, 1.29 walk per nine, 0.18 home run per nine. He was really good. He's gone to Washington. He has found a new gear. He's some clay, and we know Cleveland does well with clay. Slider is a work in progress, but it shows the command, shows the control, shows 2 potential plus pitches right now. And
developing a third.
Yeah, and he's the perfect, like, with the way things lock, I mean, he is probably going to be a top 5 college pitcher for me. That might be crazy talk to some, but I think he's going to be there for me when it's all said and done. Like, I like him more than Will Sanders. I like him. I would rather take him in the second or third than take like Brett Lauder in the first. Like, if you're looking at things relative to value, it's like, I'd rather go with someone like him where I feel like there's more developmental growth potential than more the finished product, especially if that means I can go bat in the opening round.
And I would think too for Lord, if you're talking, I don't know, second round, third round, probably where he goes, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's taking that money.
Yeah.
He's not after how far he has come growth wise. Like, yeah, there might be more for him to do, but you know, don't go back to school for a fourth year. That, I mean, now he has more eligibility in Division I, but you know, that when you offer that kind of money and you come from the path he has taken to get here, at least in terms of late development, that money in the second or third round should be enough to sign him, because I'm sure that you're going over slot anyway.
And he went to Menlo High School. We know Cleveland scouts the heck out of California programs. There's a decent chance they saw him in school. Most successful Menlo players, Kevin Bass, the outfielder, Gary Johnson, the outfielder. Griff McGarry is a really big prospect you should probably know, who also went there. So there's a, well, these are various Menlos, so maybe this isn't the same. I'm realizing they're showing different cities on this, so that's it's not as helpful as I thought. So maybe they didn't go to the same one. I'm going to have to reorganize, but still, you know, there's a chance he was seen facing someone. Let's see, the the one he went to. But either way, it doesn't really matter the particular one he went to.
Yeah.
The San Carlos one, or no, is claiming that San Carlos is now a college. So this is all messed up. But he's now 6'3". He's really interesting. Check out Kiefer Lord.
Yep, Kiefer Lord. All right. Before we get out of here real quick, White Sox Guardians, first of three in Chicago. First night is Shane Bieber and Lance Lynn. Lance Lynn, it has not been good for him this year. He is just getting walloped. His best start of the year came back in March. He gave up 7 runs to the Royals last year. The Royals are kind of down in the doldrums offensively with Cleveland, although I do kind of like the lineup a little more with, you know, Nick Prado and Vinny Pasquantino and some other guys. But he gave up 4 runs to the Reds, who are not that great. The Rays, he had a no-hitter going and then gave up 4 runs. They lost that game. Blue Jays, 4 runs. They're a great offense. Phillies, 5 runs. It's not been good. His ERA is 7.51, and expected ERA is just as ugly. It is 5.43. So things are bad for Lance Lynn. Good news for the Guardians is he throws a lot of fastballs. He's fastball cutter sinker, doesn't throw a lot of other pitches. The Guardians are generally a better fastball hitting team than they are an off-speed hitting team, so that's good news. He's been bad. And Shane Bieber's going. The White Sox do not hit right-handers well. Against right-handers this year, the White Sox are hitting they have an 84 WRC plus. That's 235, 293, 378 slash line if you're playing at home. So, you know, this all should be positive indicators for the Cleveland in this series. Doesn't mean it will be because, you know, we've seen the way things have gone this year for them. Hasn't been great, and the Guardians can't hit. The White Sox, though, the one thing they do better than the Cleveland is they hit lefties. They have a 107 WRC plus against left-handers, 745 OPS. Logan Allen starts the rubber match of the series. That is on Thursday, Logan Allen and Dylan Cease. So watch out for that one. I suppose the middle matchup is just Battenfield and Clevinger on Wednesday, so that'll be interesting. He has not been good either. The White Sox offense just is – they got some good hitters. I mean, Jake Berger's good so far. He's their best hitter, arguably. Yeah. Luis Robert's still pretty good.
Mankato's hit since he's come back. Grandel has had a nice bounce back. This is definitely the class of the division in terms of offense. You know, Andrew Vaughn and Gavin Sheets have been about average. But, you know, they
Benintendi's been a disaster. I mean, I should say disaster. He's got a 331 OBP, and that's
to me the big disaster is Tim Anderson. Like,
yeah, he's been bad this year.
He's reverted to like the Tim Anderson of like it's like he turned 30 and turned into pre-breakout Tim Anderson. Where
he turned into a pumpkin. Yeah, I mean, they're starting Hanser Alberto, who's
Oscar Colas got sent down. He was supposed to be ready to go. I expected more from Andrew Vaughn. Like, being league average is great. I would take Andrew Vaughn on the Guardians at heartbeat, right. But
after a year ago, what he did, yeah. And their bullpen's a disaster. So, I mean, this is a series where Cleveland should at least find some success. You would hope, you know, like you're facing lefty relievers like Aaron Bummer. Aaron Bummer's been terrible this year.
Hanser Alberto has pitched in 2 games. That's how bad it's been. They've gone to the hitter pitcher.
Too bad they DFA'd Jake Diekman, who immediately went to the Rays after they lost Garrett Clevenger. Yeah. But, you know, Jimmy Lambert's there. He's bad. I don't know if he's even hurt or not. But, I mean, so the lefties in their bullpen are not good. So that's a positive for Cleveland as well. You're not going to see a lot of lefties in the bullpen that are going to kill them, hopefully. So, I don't know. Graveman's
the best reliever. Santos and Kelly are the guys to pay attention to in that bullpen. Kenyon Milton. And that's it. Like, Bummer's been bad, but his FIP says that he hasn't been. So, like, he's going to
walk a lot of guys. I mean, he's got 6 walks per 9.
His FIP is a 3.6. So,
yeah.
Saying that he's been a little unlucky. But here's Lucas Giolito, who's been their best pitcher. I think they were originally going to miss Cease. They moved Kopech back. And Kopech has not been good. Like, if they had the original thing, would have been Lynn, Kopech, and Clevinger, and that would have been ideal because all 3 of those guys are below average. Right. Clevinger might be extra hyped, but I don't think he's got it left in the arm. So extra hype might lead to him pitching very poorly.
We'll find out. It should be a matchup Cleveland should succeed in, but, you know, things have been kind of upside down all year anyway, so who knows.
And I'll refrain from commenting on Mike Clevenger's warm-up slash entry music, which is about the lowest class thing I think I've seen in baseball this year.
Yeah, so, I won't go there.
Just leave it at that. Stay classy, Mike Clevenger.
Stay classy.
So classy. You know, they got a Tanner. We got a Tanner. And who's got the most Tanners? I don't know. But
it's got to be Cleveland.
You know, there's a lot of Tanners in this matchup. There's not really that many Tanners. I'm just having some fun. you know, they need to win. They need to take two out of three. Lynn looks done. Cease is good, and that's against Allen. So you got to win the first two because the third one's going to be the uphill battle. So you really got to take care of business against two guys who look cooked. And now that I've said that, those two guys are going to have their best starts of the year. But probably. Hopefully they will take care of business. And
when in doubt, blame Jeff. That's fine.
I mean, I ruined Daniel Espino's career, so it's fair.
This is true. You did.
I have Tanner Bivey on my fantasy team, so when his arm falls off, you can blame me later.
Not going to go there.
He's going to be fine. He survived the curse of it. If anything, he's thrived since I drafted him in our league. But I want to thank you to all of our great listeners out there. I was trying to think who I should throw a shout out today for who's always out there responding. You know, I'm going to go old school, Nathan Kinsley. I haven't heard as much. I hope you're doing well, Nathan. Occasionally I get DMs from you. Really good dude. React Asylum is someone I don't think I've given a shout out as an everydayer who's been having some really good takes on some things on there. Some adding to the conversation. As always, we appreciate your time to comment, review. We do have an iTunes review. We'll get to that tomorrow. Very kind words in the iTunes review. So we definitely should take a moment. And we're up 25 spots in the iTunes rankings. So again, thank you to everyone out there doing your part, being part of the Locked On Guardians team. Continue to download daily. Listen, comment, like, tell a friend who might like the Guardians or baseball in general, or maybe they're interested in the draft. Our mock draft episode keeps creeping up. Thank you again, and go, go, Guardians, go.